This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi, everyone. It's 12:15. We still have people joining, and I expect a pretty full house today with our guests. So we're going to give another minute or two for people to join. Any employee assembly members who haven't already added EA in front of your name, if you could do that, that's very helpful. Thank you. Well, it seems to have slowed down. So why don't I call the meeting to order? And Andrea, you can begin with roll call.
Perfect. Adrian Durant, are you here? I see you.
Yes, here. Sorry.
Alan Mittman. I am here. Andrea Hammond-Mott. Anise Shaft.
I'm here.
Brandon Fortenberry. I see you too. And Brenda Fisher. Brian Goodell.
Present.
Deborah Howell.
Present.
Derek Barrett just came in.
Present, present.
Ellen Miller.
Here.
Hey, hey, DePew.
Present.
Jackie Crickey.
Present.
Jamie DeWong.
Present.
Jeremy Stewart. Jessica Townley. Jessica Withers is here. Joe Canella. Justin Chandler.
Present.
Michelle Loparco.
Here.
Kate Supron.
I think Kate's just joined.
Okay. Kit Tannenbaum.
Here.
Christy Mahoney. Lisa Zacharias.
Here.
Marcus Brooks. Marcy Benda.
Present.
Maren Cherry, I think, is still on leave. And Christine Mahoney, just for the record, did just enter.
Andrea, I was also popped on late. It's Kate.
Okay, Kate Supron is
here.
Might
have already gone past me.
Stacy Coyle. Stephanie Rezu.
Here.
Okay. I think that's who I have at this point in time.
Thanks, Andrea. One last reminder for employee assembly members to rename themselves and put EA in front of their name. It's super helpful during the meeting. Oh, and Christy is here now. Next up, I'll read the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Goyekono, the Cayugan Nation. The Goyekono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyekono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Goyekono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. So thank you, everyone, for being here. This is great. We do have a special meeting today. We have one of our semesterly meetings with President Pollack and Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer Mary Opperman. They'll be joining us around 12:30. So before then, we're going to do some business, including addressing our minutes from the November 3rd. So do we have any corrections or a motion to approve the November 3rd minutes? Kit, your hand is up.
Yes, pretty nitpicky, but I was listed in the attendance as being present and also absent, and I was absent last meeting.
So with that change, we'll make that change to the attendance record. With that change, is there a motion to approve or any other corrections? Ellen?
I move to approve as amended.
Thank you. Do we have a second? Brian?
Second.
Thank you. If there's no objection, then we'll move forward by unanimous consent. And I don't see any. So with the change to the attendance, the minutes are approved. Since we still have a couple of minutes, executive committee has to make a decision about how we're going to hold our meetings in the spring semester starting in January. So I thought we could do a pulse poll of employee assembly members. You're not committing yourself, but just if you think you would attend in person in the spring starting in January, would you put your, Ellen, are we doing hand raise? I'll do hands raise. Would you raise your hand if you think you would attend in person starting in January? Just a quick poll. Thanks. And remember, you would never have to. We'll always have Zoom as an option. This is just to help us decide whether to continue fully Zoom or go back to hybrid. Okay. Thanks, everyone. You can put your hands down. I counted 9 or 10. Great. So we will talk about that at our next exec meeting and make a decision. And I think we have time. We did get a volunteer for another one of our liaison positions. So I'd like to have us vote in order to, so that committees can be fully staffed and move forward. Stephanie Rizu offered to be our liaison to the University Assembly's Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment. And Stephanie is one of our new members, so I really appreciate that. Oh. Do we have a second for Stephanie's nomination? Marcy, your hand is up.
I second her.
Thank you, Marcy. And we'll do unanimous consent, just like we have with other liaison appointments. So if there are any, if there's any opposition, speak up. Otherwise, we will appoint Stephanie Rizu, the EA liaison to the University Assembly's Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment. Thank you, Stephanie, and congratulations. Those were all those things I was hoping to get to before the president joined. This is fantastic. We actually have a couple of minutes.
In the couple of minutes, I'm sorry, I didn't raise my hand.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Deborah. I was just about sorry. To. No, go ahead.
The Campus Welfare Committee does need an EA representative and an employee representative, if anyone is interested.
Yeah.
Sorry, Deb.
Michelle, your hand is up.
I was appointed to a UA committee and have yet to receive any information on that committee. Is there any reason to believe that they're...
I've reached out and I'll reach out again, Michelle. I don't have any answers, but I'll check on it again. Sorry about that. I appreciate it. We've put the effort in and we'll check in on that again. Brandon, your hand is up.
I was going to ask what committee it was, and I can.
I think it's the Transportation Hearing Board. And Lisa's on. I think, Lisa, you're on that one too, right? Is that why your hand is up?
Yes, I too, and I have not received anything either.
Well, I'll follow up on that again. We have a couple of minutes, Andrea.
It's later in the agenda, but I could talk real quickly about the campus planning committee, or do you want to wait to the end for that?
If you think you can fit it in, I say go for it.
It's very quick. And Christy, I think you were at that last meeting as well. So please let me know if I forget anything, but two notable projects were discussed at the campus planning committee. One is the ILR courtyard landscape design. That is something that it's pretty prominent in the campus planning committee. Again, does not provide approval, but it's just more of an for your information of what was happening there. Pretty, it's in honor of Thomas Golden, who was the associate director of the Yang Tan Institute and died this past year very suddenly. For those of us who have known Thomas, he was a force to be reckoned with. And since his passing, the ILR courtyard, upper courtyard, is being named in his memory. And then the other notable project was talking about the plant science building renewal, a large project that is coming forth with that. So those are the two big issues that we talked about at the campus planning committee. Christine, I didn't know if you had anything else.
No, I think you covered it. Thank you.
Okay. So just covered it in the quick time so that we don't have to spend time at the end of the meeting talking about that.
I appreciate that. Ellen, your hand is up.
I'm not sure if this will be in Andrea's exec committee report later or not, but I do just want to say thanks to everyone who attended the president's address to staff. We had about 50 in-person attendees and over 1,200 online attendees. And if you're not aware, we did present the Employee Assembly Appreciation Award, and the winner this year was the Cornell COVID Testing Laboratory. And Jackie did a really great job presenting the award to them. The recording is not yet available, but it will be on the EA website once it is.
Yes, thank you. And it was great to have so many Employee Assembly members volunteering and non-Employee Assembly members volunteering, and to see them in person. It was really nice. I see Mary is here. Hi, Mary. I'll just remind everyone that the meeting is being recorded and we do have live transcription. I forgot that to mention that again at the beginning. I'll mention too that since today is focused on President Pollack, who's joining us, and we always have a lot to talk about with Mary, as well as the president, we've invited Mary to come back separately to another meeting. So that'll date will be announced whenever her schedule aligns with ours. And I believe the president is here. And
yes, hi. Yep. Yeah,
hi. Well, thank you for joining us, President Pollack and Vice President Opperman. And I think I saw Joel Molina here as well. Thanks for joining. This is always a great time to have you meet with the Employee Assembly. We can hear updates from you, but also give you some updates. And
great.
We will go ahead and start with our committee updates.
Okay.
So I've asked the chairs to have a couple of bullet points of things they're really proud of or things they're hoping to work on this year.
Wonderful.
We're gonna start with executive committee with Andrea Hanlon-Mott.
I promise to be brief, Jessica. We could talk for days, but as the executive vice chair of the EA, I help manage our executive committee, and we focus on a lot of the logistics of pulling things together for our meetings as well as other things. But I think the notable piece is talking about the overall direction of the EA and the long-term engagement issues that the EA wants to work on in light of the most difficult last 18 or more months. But also where we're going in the future and how to engage EA or our employees extensively throughout. So
great,
that's what we're working on. And again, Mary's been really helpful in helping us sort of guide that at our EA executive meetings, or leadership meetings, excuse me. So that's it. And we'll go to the next. It's communications. Ellen?
Hello. Communications outreach and recognition is quite a hefty load for our committee. This term, we were able to divide that up a little bit so that we could have a greater focus on each of those topics. So I'm happy to report that we have subcommittee for outreach and communications, which is being headed up by Derek, who is in this meeting. I believe he's here somewhere. I saw him. And then we have a recognition subcommittee that is headed up by Kristen Sifri, who has been a long-standing member of the committee. And for outreach and communications, we have been working on our monthly EA Voice newsletter to communicate to staff important events and communications that are relevant to the staff population each month. And we have redesigned our employee assembly pamphlet and included a QR code to make it more digital friendly. And we are working on promoting the employee assembly to the staff population so that they're more aware of our mission and how we can be of assistance to them and to have them get involved, opportunities for getting involved with our different committees and different opportunities that we have. On the recognition side, our committee is currently working on the launch of the new award for staff integrity and inclusion. That award was adopted at the end of last term to replace and upgrade the Opperman Award that we previously had. So this is a new award that we're really excited to launch, and that process is in the works right now with our award subcommittee. And then in the spring, we will be launching again the George Peter Award, which we were able to relaunch at the end of last term as well. So that's really exciting. And then in general, we've been utilizing the Employee Appreciation Portal more and encouraging other staff members to do so as well, and really trying to find ways that we can partner with human resources and other units on campus to recognize outstanding employees. And that's kind of are in general what we've been working on and what we've got going on. And if you have any questions or anything, I'm happy to provide more information.
It's great.
Thanks, Ellen. Next up is the Benefits and Policy Committee with Brian Goodell as chair.
Hi, welcome. A lot of the committee, the BPC has been focused on some of it it was navigating resources and communication. Sometimes we get a lot of concerns that really just need to be redirected and given the right information. So one of the things that we worked on from last term and then into this term is incorporating a liaison or an ex officio from labor relations, benefits and compliance and policy services, and getting a player that would have some of the answers that we were looking for in the group. And that was successful. We were able to do that. And I was really happy that they got involved, and they'll be going to our meetings. So some of those questions will be answered. Last year we had like 6 guest speakers. We've had 2 already. We've had Alexis Brubaker and Gordon Barger from Benefits share some of the information with the group. That helps solve a lot of questions and concerns brought by constituents. Some of the things we worked on were the cutoff date, the pet policy, endowed health benefit plan, and the state plans, questions about care.com and benefits for childcare. And some of the things we're working on in the future and we're hoping to work on is staff retention.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
What do you think is the single major issue in staff retention?
Right now, I think it's COVID. I mean, for obvious reasons, some people are looking for remote possibilities. So they're looking to be employed in other occupations that give them that access mm-hmm. or where they can work remotely. Some is political, some is personal beliefs. But I think that's the major issue that I think retention is circling around right now.
Thank you.
Brian. Next is the Employee Welfare Committee chaired by Christine Mahoney.
Thank you. Hello. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. So this semester, or I guess it's semester, right? Year, maybe. We have continued our strong partnership with Work Life, Michelle Arterby, Cornell Wellness, Ruth Merle Doyle, and Transportation, Bridget Brady. I'm just going to rattle off some of the topics that we've discussed and advanced. Support and inclusion for the newly remote work staff, mental health for Cornell employees, launching the restorative circles and supporting that, belonging for staff with disabilities, transportation issues around hybrid permits, ALOT bus stops, and the wait list process, enhancement opportunities to the onboarding process, emergency preparedness, and support of the CARE Fund.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chrissy. Next, we have Education and Development Committee, chaired by Mercy Benda.
Hi there. Welcome. So we have met, and our main objective was we would like to continue to promote the CLASP program. We'd like to see that do well and continue to thrive. Another thing is monitoring the EDP courses, a way to possibly improve on the numbers of people, look at why perhaps fewer people are using it. Is it because people already have degrees? Maybe perhaps a way to look at how many have degrees and who would continue to have more or to go further. One thing which also came up, which I'm eager to speak at our next meeting, is something that came up in the UA meeting yesterday was that English is a second language and the possible ways that maybe the education groups or something that's already in place might be able to help that, or look to ways where people who are English isn't their first language to give them help, something that can help them as well. Also looking at any article features to promote any of the already great programs that are already there, such as EDP and the CLASP. And that's pretty much it for now. Thank you.
I just want to quickly say that I went to the staff graduation earlier this year, you know, for all the staff that got degrees, and it was 2 years worth, and mm-hmm. it was just so impressive. I was really just blown away by the stories of all the staff who had gotten degrees over the, even during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was able to go to that as well. And it was great. It was a very rainy day, but it was, it was great to see all the people and all their families as well. I was happy to be a part of that too. Thank you.
And lastly, we have the Elections Committee, which has already been very active with co-chair Jamie Duong.
Hi, yep, we had a special election this fall, added 5 new members, and the Elections Committee will get ready for a robust, hopefully robust spring election.
Yes, we appreciate that extra work with a second round of elections this year, this term. So that's all of our committees, President Pollack.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Jessica.
No, I was going to say, I would like to turn it over to you.
Well, first I want to thank the committees. I mean, it's really remarkable that you're doing all this work in the midst of everything else. So thank you all for doing this work. Since I talked to all of you just last week, I'm not going to give a lot of updates, but there's just a few things that we didn't get to talk about last week. So if I could take maybe just 5 or 6 minutes to bring you up to date on some other things I didn't have the opportunity to talk about, and then we can just have a conversation about anything that you like. I did want to give a quick update on the Public Safety Advisory Committee. You might remember that 1.5 years ago, we stood this committee up and they made some recommendations to me last summer. This was created in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. And we asked how we could rethink public safety here at Cornell. I'd say the biggest recommendation by far was that we develop and implement an alternative public safety and response unit to be fully operational within 2 years. Now, this doesn't mean getting rid of CUPD, and I think the events of 1.5 years ago show why you need to have CUPD. It was CUPD who ran into Goldwyn Smith when we thought there was an armed person in there. But there are many things that happen on campus for which you don't need the response of a uniformed armed police officer. And in fact, sending a uniformed armed police officer can be very upsetting to the people involved. And so there is this recommendation to stand up this alternative security force. And in fact, we've already done that. We've begun that. Student Campus Life created a community response team that started this fall and has 4 members. And they are now the first responders to non-criminal offenses and to nonviolent incidents. But that's just the first step. We have put out an RFP for a consultant to think about how we can expand this more broadly. And then we are also paying attention to the other recommendations of the committee. One is to create a communications campaign so that people understand who to call. Do they call the police? Do they call 911? Or do they call the community response team? And the other is to continue to try to diversify CUPD. And again, I want to level set. Of course, we are very interested in doing that. We will continue to do everything we can. But it is important to note that the current racial and ethnic mix of CUPD both is parallel with the local community and with police forces, campus police forces around the country. So that doesn't mean we're not going to work harder, but I just sort of want to level set. It's going to be a lot of work to do further diversification. I do want to also give a little bit of update on emergency response. I mean, we had this bomb scare. Thankfully, that was a hoax. Then we had the search for an armed individual. And I want to say a few words about those incidents because we always do an after action analysis. Every emergency situation is different. There's always lessons to be learned. There's always things we can do better. And right now we are very carefully reviewing the whole series of events and listening to feedback. I said it last week. I want to say it again. I want to thank CUPD. They just without hesitation responded quickly. And one positive lesson from the bomb scare was that we saw really great coordination between CUPD, IPD, and a broad set of other local and regional law enforcement. That coordination was very smooth, and I'm very happy about that. I think the biggest challenge in these cases is always communication. So while these incidents are going on, we're sitting here and we're disseminating information that we get from law enforcement in real time. What we know changes quickly, it evolves quickly. And our first priority, of course, is always safety, right? Our first priority is cordoning off areas that need to be cordoned, moving people out of buildings that need to be moved out. And then also, you know, as soon as we've done that, to provide updates in a timely manner. I do understand that the community wants more detailed information and they want that as quickly as possible. And what we're always trying to balance is speed, accuracy, and level of detail. If we get a lot of detail out fast, it's probably going to be inaccurate. If we wait a little while, it'll be slower, but it'll be more accurate. We'll have more detail. And we know that everyone wants to know what's happening right now. And I think particularly among the student population, this is exacerbated by students who've got on social media and all kinds of rumors spin around. I'm not saying we can't do better, we can, but I'm trying to explain the last thing we want to do is rush to share information that might be incorrect, might unintentionally cause confusion or distress or even harm. Now, we know that there was confusion, particularly during Tuesday's events, about exactly what parts of campus were supposed to shelter in place and about the status of classes. That situation was evolving off campus under the purview of the sheriff and IPD. We were getting direction from them about what the shelter in place perimeter was. I mean, it kept changing. So we are reviewing everything. We're reviewing the way we communicate with IPD. And we're gonna be thinking about how we can be more specific and clear in our messaging. I do want to encourage everyone, if you have a cornell.edu email address, which is all of you, you got the Cornell alert emails, but I would really encourage you to go to the emergency.cornell.edu website and also sign up for text and phone alerts. I mean, frankly, I get my email on my phone, so it's all the same, but you know, it isn't a bad thing to also get the text and phone alerts and also maybe download that Rave Guardian application. And I do want to say, when we had these two incidents close together, you know, it kind of felt like a trend, but they weren't related. One was a cruel hoax, as best we can tell, started by some people hundreds and thousands of miles away from here. The other involved us geographically, but we were not a target, and neither originated with Cornell students and spaces. Still very scary, still very upsetting. And then the last thing I just wanted to really quickly say, because I get this asked this all the time is, okay, the pandemic is still going, well, two things. One thing I get asked, now maybe this was answered at EA, when are we gonna stop wearing masks? We're following state guidelines, state regulations and CDC guidelines, stay tuned. But people ask me all the time, what have we learned and what are we gonna do differently? And I think there's a lot we've learned and a lot we are doing differently. So just as a few examples, when I think about our prospective students, we've made standardized testing optional because of the pandemic, but we're extending that experiment and we're gonna gather the data to see whether that might be something we continue over time. We have a sense that that might enable us, might help with our socioeconomic and racial and ethnic diversity goals. And we're gonna look at that. We also have virtual engagement opportunities for prospective students who can't come here. When I think about the education program itself, our faculty have actually in many cases changed the ways they assess students. They discovered online that it was tricky to give big exams. It was hard to control for cheating. So instead they gave more low stakes quizzes and they found that that may be a better measure of assessment. We see more faculty adopting that. We see more use of online tools to supplement. We still have in-person classes. In-person classes are critical. That's why our students come here. But for example, online office hours periodically turn out to be something that people like a lot. We're seeing more virtual symposia, more virtual speakers, more remote collaboration. A student life, we have an extent, which we did an extended move-in period to enable social distancing and testing and quarantine. It turned out to be a really good thing and we're continuing it. We have more telehealth and more teletherapy. Staff meetings like these, some of them are in person, others are remote and we're more flexible about that. There was also a lot of cross-training of staff across units during the pandemic. And we're doing more of that. I'll mention just one more. There's a lot more I could mention, but this is one that's been fun with me. For me, it's been fun. Before the pandemic, I spent a lot of time on the road meeting with donors. And that will start back up again, but I haven't been traveling too much yet. But we've created these things called virtual salons. And what we do in a virtual salon is we invite three or four experts. They might be faculty in a particular topic, but for example, we did one on affordability. And we invited the vice provost for enrollment management. And then we bring in 10 or 12 alumni, potential donors who are really interested in these topics. And because we're doing it virtually, they can come from all over the country and all over the world. And we spend about a half an hour sort of giving expert discussion on these topics and then a half an hour of conversation. And they've really been, I've learned so much. They've really been fun and people have been engaged and we're gonna keep doing that. So there's a lot of changes. Each one might seem small, but when you put them together, I really do think there are some things about the new normal that are just, you know, still disheartening and depressing and discouraging, but there's some things we're doing that I think we learned and are better. So I didn't want to spend a lot of time because I talked at you a long time last week. I thought, Jessica, if it's okay, I would just open it up for discussion.
Yes, would you like to, thank you very much. And yes, we did just hear from you.
Indeed.
Would you like to move to the pre-submitted questions?
Sure. Do you want to ask them? How do you want to do that?
Yep, Andrea is going to read them if that works for you. So we collected some questions ahead of time for President Pollack. And Andrea, are you all ready?
I am. Thank you so much. One of the questions is, one positive impact of the pandemic has been the improvement of accessibility on campus events, work, study, and meetings for individuals with disabilities, disclosed and undisclosed. Can you speak to any efforts ongoing within Cornell to understand and support the ongoing improvement of accessibility?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that sort of blends into the last answer I gave, we learned a lot about the advantage of hybrid event experiences, things like this. They're not always possible, but to the extent possible, we really would like to continue to host those. I think it's become just much more natural to get on Zoom or to offer a hybrid option. And I think we will continue to do that as much as we can.
Can you discuss Cornell's current thoughts on work stipends or work allowances for remote workers?
I'm going to give that one to Mary, I think.
Yeah, thanks, Andrea. So we do have the option, it's not a requirement, that if somebody is fully remote, so let me back up and say, the way we're thinking about this is the university will provide one office space. So if you have an office space on campus, that is the office space. If you're fully remote, we do have the option or suggestion that you provide a one-time stipend of $500. So a number of the units that have more remote workers are implementing it, but it isn't a requirement. We did it at HR and CIT did it because we're more engaged in full remote. But if you have an office available to you on campus, then that would be your office. So hybrid, we would likely provide the office here on campus.
Good. This is, again, the next question you've sort of answered about thoughts on sharing how workforce and HR is currently managing that hiring, onboarding, in that hybrid / remote work environment in terms of onboarding folks?
Yeah, we actually have an emerging program that Cassie Joseph is running called Cornell Unboxed. And so it's a version of onboarding that has a fair amount of virtual, it's virtual in nature. So it's great for people who are hybrid or remote, but honestly, it's also great for people to do in their own time and in their own way and have their family watch it if they want to. So we're going to continue to improve and add to the Cornell, sort of the big red welcome, having both a virtual and an in-person opportunity. Right now we are still looking and plan to employ probably in January, an online I-9 verification, which will greatly improve the onboarding process because people won't have to come into a place to have their data verified. So we're testing it right now in Workday. And that will help a lot as well. So we're piecing the new pieces of onboarding back together, and the acclimation report, which shows your supervisors how to onboard, is being looked at for hybrid and remote work as well.
The next question is sort of related and to that issue of flexibility, talking about how staff have greatly benefited from that flexibility in workplace location, as well as scheduling offered by managers during the pandemic.
It again, sort of related to some of the stuff that you've talked about. Can you discuss HR efforts to understand current conditions and manager policies? And do you see Cornell's approach to flexible work changing?
So we did a pulse survey on remote work. We have that data coming back. So both for remote and flexible work. You know, we know that people who are remote part of the time or fully like it and want to keep it. And we know that some of our work on campus is really better done on premise. And so I don't know that we are ever going to find the perfect balance here. So in some cases, I'll be honest, it is that managers prefer to have people back. But I think that's being used as the only reason why we have variations in work scheduling. I don't think that's actually true. I think some managers are more comfortable discussing hybrid work arrangements. But when I've gotten engaged, and I have on a number of these, there really is work either with students or with faculty or in the research space that is very hard to do in the same way if you're not here. And I just think that that's a reality that we're going to need to work our way through. I'll also tell you that I've heard from people who are remote who, you know, miss being on campus and are wanting to be able to come on campus more and use the hoteling space. So this is a really changing time. And I think we're still, by now, I certainly expected that we would be talking about this in a post-pandemic way. In other words, we would not be discussing working on campus and working at home and working hybrid, still under the complexities of a health circumstance. And so I think it's really hard for us to tease out the issues now because there still are circumstances that are pandemically driven, driving a lot of this. I wish I had a better answer. It's just very complicated right now.
And the next question is sort of taking that to as well. I'll now read it. Thanks in large part to Cornell, the Ithaca area attracts many high-skilled workers who often discover that Cornell is one of the best local employers. With many large companies across the country offering more and fully remote positions that pay very well, what's the university's plan to retain talent and avoid the type of brain drain that could result from people having access to exponentially larger job market than what was available pre-COVID?
Yeah, it's a great question. Martha?
Yeah, I was just going to say a few things, Mary, and then maybe you. I'd be happy to have you chime in too. I mean, my sense is that there's a silver lining here. And the silver lining is that there are a lot of people who really want to live in Ithaca. And indeed, one of the trends nationally after the pandemic is that more and more people want to live in rural areas. They used to want to live in urban areas, and there's this move to live in more rural areas. And one of the things that has always been a challenge for us has been dual careers, has been couples who move here, who would like to move here, but we can't find jobs for both of them in the area. And I think actually the silver lining of the greater availability of remote work is we can begin to attract people who want to live in a rural region, but have a spouse or a partner who can work remotely. That's just one thought, Mary. I'm sure you have more to add.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say that. I think it goes back to what we were talking about, Andrea. Some people really do want remote work. They don't. They're still sort of in a space for any number of reasons where kind of being in their pajamas and working from their house is their preference. However, there are also people who really miss a residential experience and whose companies did let them move anywhere they want, but they may not necessarily want that full time. And so I think the opportunity to attract more people to this area, and then for folks who at least right now are still really thinking that they don't want to come into a work setting, provides us a bigger pool from which to fish and folks to find their space doing what they really love. So I think it's an and, not an or. We are already in this area. I was talking to an executive in Rochester the other day. I've had some conversations with people in the Finger Lakes. I really think this is could very easily be a destination for people. And with them will come individuals for whom working on campus and with the students is really quite attractive.
Great. The last pre-submitted question that we have is for you, Martha, to talk about this. We greatly appreciate your response to campus in light of the stresses last week. Do you have any thoughts and perspectives on how to support staff and our campus community as we close out the semester and calendar year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. And as I said last week, trying to be completely honest, there's just no way to sugarcoat a pandemic. It's been hard on us. You know, it's this bizarre moment where it's been hard. It's affected not just Cornell and not just the community and the region, but the state and the nation. And you know, by definition of the pandemic, people over the world. We have tried to do what we can centrally. I've tried to be as transparent as I could on the budget and tried to return as much of the funds as we were able. We tried to extend that time for vacation days. I know that open positions is causing a lot of stress. And I know that Mary and her team in HR are working as hard as possible to fill those positions. But people are tired. Everyone is really tired. And I think it's actually the best way to offer support is not for a handful of us. I mean, the handful also in the center can do these, they're not just mechanical, but they can do things like, you know, monitor the budget, change the time for vacation days. But I think it's just really incumbent on everyone to check in with each other, to be as flexible as possible. And if you're a supervisor, really try to be as flexible as you can be and really try to be kind to one another. You know, it's just a tough time.
Wonderful, thank you. Jessica, I'm kicking it back to you.
So that was all of our pre-submitted questions. Thank you, Martha and Mary too.
You're welcome.
Do you want to, it's 102, do you want to take some questions from EA members or?
Yeah, I'm good for about another 8 minutes or so.
Okay, so employee assembly members, I'll ask you to raise your hands and I'll call on you. And I'm sorry that we won't have time to get to guest questions today. Jamie, do you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, President Pollack, for being here. I just had a question. You know, a lot of times there's some really great recommendations that university leadership comes out with that when we hear them, it's like, oh, that would be really great if those were incorporated down to the units. But it often seems like there isn't any process to see, well, what are the units doing with those recommendations? And are they enacting policies that follow those recommendations? And so it'd be really nice to know that that was something that was being reviewed and was then reported back so that people would get a sense of, you know, how much are they doing for that? Yeah. Thank you.
So I think what you raise is really, really important. And I'm gonna excuse me. I have tested negative. I have a cold. but I'm gonna answer it sort of on both sides of the ledger. So on one side of the ledger, we actually have been working very hard, even throughout the pandemic, on what we call this functional review. And the functional review is a look across all of our administrative areas to see how, it's looking at a lot of things, but I view it primarily as looking to see, do we have appropriate alignment between what happens in the center and what happens in the unit? And are the people, say, who are responsible for HR in the unit appropriately connected to and getting the messaging from and coordinating with HR in the center. And so that is helping, it's slow and it was slowed down by the pandemic, but it's helping us get to some of what you're talking about. Now, that said, on the other hand, we're a big, huge university. I came from another big, huge university. And in both these universities, we're very, very decentralized. We give a lot of autonomy to the deans of individual units. And in fact, the budget model reinforces that autonomy. And that's actually a good thing. It's not a good thing when it causes stress, but it's actually a good thing because what you need to do to be a world-class arts and sciences school, basically a liberal arts college within this bigger university, is very different from what you need to do to be, say, a world-class vet school. And so we have to, you know, so for example, in a vet school, you need to have certain staff where they're 24/7 on call to take care of those animals. And there's just differences in what needs to be done. So we have to walk this line, and it's a tricky line and we don't always get it right, but we have to walk this line between doing what you're asking for quite appropriately, making sure that as much as possible policies and recommendations get pushed down without being so autocratic that we lose what's great about our diverse universe, intellectually diverse university.
Thanks. Kit, did you have a question?
Yes, I wanted to, well, thank you, Martha and Mary, for joining us today. I wanted to circle back to a conversation that I believe was more relevant pre-pandemic to inclement weather response, excuse me. And I know that there is a resolution passed in early 2020 prior to COVID about the timeliness of operating status decisions being made, and that President Pollack, you had responded that you were working to refine those efforts. And I'm wondering, especially now in this post-COVID world, what those changes might be, if timelines can be tightened up now that we do have this campus operating status, potential hybrid operating status, and basically what efforts have been done to get those things.
Yeah, I'm gonna let Mary talk about the actual details of that. I just wanna say, in all my years in higher education, there has never been a more controversial subject. I have never been involved ever at any university I've been at on either end, as a faculty member or as a staff member, where there's been a call on winter weather and people haven't been mad. It's almost an impossible thing to get right. So with that said, seriously, of all the issues, that's the one, that and parking. But let me hand it over to Mary.
Yeah, and that actually goes, thank you, Martha, Kit. That actually goes towards why it sometimes has taken so long to come to a decision. And so the executive vice president and has kind of taken over this process and delegated it so that the decisions are not, we would spend all night watching weather, having calls at 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock and, you know, trying to find the perfect answer to a weather problem in a place where weather changes all the time. And so one of the things that has been done is we have agreed to a deadline. We will make a call one way or another by a certain time, and that call will be made, you know, with the best and available information by the senior leaders that have responsibility. That may seem like a small change, but it's actually a really big change because it was the effort to try to get every little piece of information and track it to the very last minute that made the decisions slower. And I'm not sure any better, by the way, because weather's.
So I'm going to jump in here and make a prediction. My prediction, sorry, I don't mean to be cynical about this, but I've been in this business a long time. My prediction is we're going to stick to the time frame. And that means we're going to get some things wrong. We're going to say that we're staying open and then the weather will change and there'll be a lot of snow, which if we had waited 3 hours, we would have known, and vice versa. I mean, it's just, that's going to be the trade-off.
Right. It's just very difficult because we, you know, there are a lot of factors. People live all over the place. That's why every year, Joanne and I send that note out to say, don't wait for the university to make your contingency plans. Work as a team and develop your plans. So that regardless of the operating status of the university, you know what happens if wherever you are is really bad, even if it's not bad here.
Okay, thank you.
And I think we have time for Jackie, and that is the last hand raised.
Hello. So I appreciate both of you speaking to trying to make everybody happy and never being able to do that. I sympathize greatly. I also have my own battles in my department, but I wanted to not take too long. I came up with some thoughts that maybe you could either let me know if this is already being done based off some of the stuff that came up, or if you might be able to put that out to the people who can do that. One of the things that I hear a lot about is internet speed at home. I have a colleague who said for her to get high speed internet at home, it would cost her like thousands of dollars just to get it. And I was wondering if Cornell, not saying you pay for anything, but maybe you could lobby some of the companies, I'm sure we have alums there, to realize the financial benefits of investing in our area that is up and coming. And I'm sure you have lots of people, get the mayor in there. But I'm just saying, I'm talking to people with power because you're here. So I think that would be something that would return investment from Cornell, even if no dollars were spent. But if you want to put dollars in, I'm not going to tell you not to. So that was one idea that I would throw your way. And then the other thing that I hear from people is there's this conflict. I feel like everybody at the top, this is a problem I talk about a lot. We all seem to think the same way, or at least have similar thoughts, like in this group. And then I feel like that message doesn't translate. That kind of came out more than once in this meeting. So what I thought, and my very active person, I would like to see something that is able to provide something for the staff member to advocate for themselves. So for example, there's people who want to be able to work remotely or want to hold meetings. I, as a person who coordinates events for other people, I'm often conflicted with what I feel is the best thing to do versus what I'm being told to do. And I know a lot about the resources at the vet school and everywhere. They all know me, but I think a lot of people aren't as informed as I am. And what I imagine managers are getting pieces of information about what they can do, but then they're also dealing with conflicts. So I was wondering if there was some way that we could get that information into the hands of everybody, or maybe even have it have some office related to either the CNG or some disability service be a point person and just broadcast that. You may think there are some things like cost might be an issue, but there's stuff that we can lend out to people. We have experts that can help set these things up. I would love for there to be a place for some of the reasons to be taken away, and then that decision becomes easier because there's less reasons for things not to work out. So to summarize what I was saying basically is if there was some recommendations on what the top would like to see done in the circumstances, obviously we don't want to make a broad rule because everybody, like you were just saying, there's different needs and considerations that not everybody at the top will know about, but I'd like to have some sort of guidelines or suggestions, things that the top would like to see so that people hear it from the leadership and not just me talking, because I do talk a lot, but also tools and resources and points of contact for making that something you can help broaden at your job unit or whatever. So, and that will be the end of my statement.
I'll take the first one and hand the second one to Mary. As it turns out, I was on former Governor Cuomo's Reimagine New York Commission. I was the co-chair for the telehealth subcommittee, but the committee as a whole, our number one recommendation for the state, number one recommendation was to invest in high-speed internet everywhere. And you know how things work at the state level, but that's working its way through. I'm also modestly optimistic that the new infrastructure bill that came out of DC will help, but it's going to be a long time coming. I think internet is, it's like water and power. It's kind of a basic right. And I'm always trying to advocate for it, Jackie, for what that's worth. And Mary, I'll let you take the second one. And I have to leave in 3 minutes tops.
Yep. So I was going to say the same thing. The state actually has prioritized this with its economic development funds. And I do think it's working its way through. I agree. It's a leveling factor. If you don't have high speed internet, it has lots of implications around education and the like. In terms of your other question, I think this is a great place to partner with the EA. You know, we have so much information. We have training programs about how you address a problem. We have lots of tools online. We have all sorts of things available to individuals. But to Brian's point, you know, you're not there to spend all your time talking to HR people and looking at our websites and going to our training programs. So if there's a way that we can make some of these tools more available, more readily available, that's why a lot of these programs we've put online now, love to work with the EA as to how to help people do that. Because you're absolutely right, Jackie. We all have some ability to advocate for ourselves. And it's actually in the sense that you have control over, it might not get the answer you want, but that you have control over advocating for yourself, that gives people a sense of power over what they do and a sense of control over their choices. So I'd love to work with you all to figure out how to do that better than we do it today.
I do have to run, but again, I want to thank you all. And I don't know about for you guys, but for me, Thanksgiving is my absolute favorite holiday. So I want to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, President Pollack.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Great questions. We actually have 15 minutes, so I think, what are we up to? University Assembly?
Great, great meeting, Jessica. Thank you for putting it together.
Brandon, would you like to give some updates? It's been a little bit.
Sure, yeah, I can give some brief updates. So we had President Pollack at our meeting last night. Her remarks for the group, the UA, was focused more a lot on the upcoming campaign, that do the greatest good campaign, the $5 billion that they're looking to raise over the next 5 years, and talked a little bit about some of the things that are focused in that. And one of the key areas that they spoke to were around student affordability. So addressing the number of students that are on need-based support and increasing that number and reducing the amount of financial burden, as well as there's a requirement that I wasn't familiar with around those on certain need-based financial aid to have to work during the summer as part of their kind of program of repayment for the tuition, looking to reduce that requirement with this upcoming piece. She also talked about a 20-year plan for deferred maintenance around how they can address the deferred maintenance and that the in theory project is in fact sort of designed to help with the process of that. And this campaign as well will raise funds to help to reallocate what is currently being spent on maintenance on other areas to be able to bring that into the maintenance project. I did ask the question about, you know, what is the plan for, so that we aren't addressing that we're 20 years behind, and 20 years we're just another 20 years behind. And she acknowledged that is, you know, an important aspect of this process, and looking how they allocate funds for deferred maintenance to not continue to just compound upon the issue. We had, she also talked a little bit, there was a question from the student assembly around mental health and well-being. President Pollack talked about, you know, the importance of that, and acknowledged that there was a, you know, a pretty significant campaign that started prior to the pandemic and got a little bit paused during that time frame, but that they are looking to push that forward and continue that work. Talked about, you know, hiring a company called Mantra, which I'm not super familiar with, which is an external organization to help with counseling and making more availability. And it also, you know, gave a good statistic in that the average wait time to receive to be able to schedule services for counseling and mental health is typically around 7 days, but the national average is, you know, somewhere around 21 days. So feeling that they, you know, many students feel as if there are not enough resources. And if you look at it statistically on what's available, and she acknowledges it as a staff member who isn't able to work with Cornell Health, we have, you know, we've all seen that making appointments in this area can be quite taxing. So acknowledge that there's work to be done and improvement, and really spoke about, you know, the mental health resources, and then shifting now to focus a lot on the well-being resources, things that help you in your day-to-day processes, to put more funds and energy into those aspects of things. And I think those are the main items that I had bullet points on there. So thank you, Jessica.
Brandon. Does anyone have questions for Brandon about University Assembly report? So that is actually our entire agenda. We didn't even leave time for new business because we thought it'd be pretty full. So I do want to say thank you. This has been a really intense week. We had the president's address to staff. She came to visit today. I appreciate those who sent questions ahead of time. Your engagement helps formulate the timing today. And also want to thank everyone for attending and those for asking questions today. Kit, did your hand is up?
Yes, I was just bringing attention to, since I've been monitoring the chat, there were some comments
Yep.
in response to, as Martha was talking.
I've saved the chat because I okay. saw there was quite a bit there, but today we just had time for employee assembly members questions with the president, but I have saved the chat. Thank you. So at the moment, I will open it up. We have time for open discussion. We can also entertain a motion to adjourn, and everyone gets 10 minutes. Brian, your hand is up.
Yes, it is. I too captured the chat, because there's a lot of things that I want to share with the BPC and move forward on some of that concerns about remote or staff retention, because I think some of that's vital. So thank you for everybody that put comments in there. And I do move to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second or a different motion?
I second it.
Thanks, Lisa. So our meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for participating. Take care.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.